I'm Steve Potter, and later on Cityscape, the St. Louis Symphony teams up with Circus Flora to bring the big top to Powell Hall with a performance inspired by Dylan Thomas. First-time author Terry Baker Mulligan lives in St. Louis but grew up in New York City during the 50s and 60s. She's penned a memoir called Sugar Hill, When the Sun Rose Over Harlem. It chronicles her experiences of growing up and her interactions with family and culture. St. Louis Public Radio's Aaron Williams talked with Mulligan. She first asked if writing the book began as a way to remember her childhood after moving to St. Louis more than 30 years ago.
I think that's a really nice way to say it. You know, when you have something there, you don't realize what you have. And when I came here, I had a totally different life. I was newly married. I was a new mother and a new job, which actually I took time off from when my son was born. A new house, new station wagon. I didn't even know how to drive. I had to learn how to drive when I came here. And I realized that St. Louis was not New York, and I would never have the same life again. And it's not that I missed it so much, but I wanted to honor it. And people had a hard time believing I was from Harlem very often.
Why were they surprised?
Well, Harlem was going through, this was in the 70s, and it was going through its worst times. Well, maybe not from the 20s, but it was going, and during the Depression, of course, it was another story. But lots of drugs, the heroin epidemic just devastated the community. The Apollo even closed. I mean, it's open again. You know, Harlem has revived. But that's what people were thinking. If you weren't a gangbanger or a heroin addict, they just couldn't focus on people being from Harlem who weren't like that. And, of course, that's very one-sided. There's so much culture and history and education and arts, literature, and it was then, too, and remains so.
When you moved here, what was the biggest surprise about the city? Did you know anything before you came here about St. Louis?
No. My husband thought we might be living in Jefferson City. He clerked for a judge, one of the choices might have been Jefferson City. I knew nothing about Jefferson City or St. Louis, really. That was kind of that New York-centric dismissal of anything west of the Mississippi. But the other reason is when you grow up in a city, you learn about it in school. I mean, my children learned about the history of their state and, you know, the Mississippi River, whereas I learned about the Hudson River and the Manhattan Indians, and I just didn't know anything. It was also very hard to find my way around. I was, you know, a new driver, and St. Louis is very sprawling and very spread out, so I was hesitant to go too far. I had to, you know, learn how to navigate without downtown and uptown and all the streets being numbered. So everything was different. I had a new set of friends, but it was good. You know, it was great. It turned out fine. I still miss New York. New York has really gotten its act together, and I'm so happy for it. I would live there again.
You would?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Even though it is not the New York that you capture so fondly.
No, but it's, my stepfather used to say, New York is so great, they had to name it twice. I don't think he was original with that. I think that comes from a song, New York, New York. It's just so fabulous. And it is. I mean, there's much to do, and I enjoy going back. I don't think that would ever happen. And when I say I do it in a minute, that's, you know, I'm just kind of...
It's a long minute.
Yeah.
Did your family help to assist in any of your research?
A little bit. I actually say where I got answers from my mother or my aunt, but they were always very reluctant to talk about the past, which was another reason I wanted to write the story. My husband's family knew a lot about their past, and I think that was not uncommon with Black people from the South who had come up north and kind of put a lot of their past behind them. Same with my father's family. They just wouldn't tell me. So when my mother read the book, she had a hard time with it. You know, she didn't understand that people talk about their family. But she did help me with some things.
And you were raised in a very tight network of women. You had your grandmother, who was from
Virginia. Norfolk, Virginia.
Norfolk, Virginia. Yeah. And you had your mother, and then you had your mother's two sisters. And then even to that note, you know, your father was a former dancer. You just had this sprawling Harlem-like life.
I did. I saw Harlem, like, got down to its bones. My stepfather was a fan of the Apollo Theater, and he started taking me when I was very young. So I spanned three eras of Apollo wonders. The big band sound was just going out when I guess I was about six or seven. And then I'd call it the modern jazz era came in. Lionel Hampton and Count Basie were kind of playing out, and the young divas, Dinah Washington, Miriam Makeba, Odetta, they were the African sensations. Eartha Kitt, Pearl Bailey, and then I was only maybe 12 when rock and roll just galvanized the world, really. You know, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, those guys lived up the street from us. You know, the girl groups and the boy groups. And a lot of my friends did not get to do that because they didn't have a stepfather who would take them every, you know. We had our 45 records, but I actually sat, you know, on fifth row and watched this on a weekly basis.
At the time, you didn't realize that you were literally watching history being made.
Well, I'm not so sure. It was so thrilling to be in that theater. I had some sense of the specialness of it. I really did. It was a privilege. You'd get all dressed up, and my grandmother would curl my hair and put on my best clothes. And my mom was working. That's why he took me, because he worked nights and mom worked days at the Amsterdam News. And I knew it was very special. It was like going to Radio City Music Hall at the Christmas show, but I did this every week. I compared the two. And I understood from the adults how some of these musical acts were impacting the industry. Motown was not really a thing yet. It hadn't come into its own. The streets in New York City, and I guess Detroit, where a lot of these groups, Chicago, Newark, a lot of these street corner groups developed and became big hits. The young rock and rollers. We called it rock and roll then, not rhythm and blues.
Oh, it still went under the name of rock and roll then.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So when you go back to do you go back home often?
I've been home a lot this past year, yes.
Are you a like a celebrated native daughter, author of the city who is, you know, well received and has captured her hometown so well?
New York doesn't really do that. but in small ways, I have a picture on my website. I think it's on there. In front of the building that's kind of the focal point of where so much of the action started when I wrote about living on 369 Edgecombe Avenue up on Sugar Hill and what a privilege it was to live on Sugar Hill. And a photographer I met, he came to one of my talks, and he's doing a book on the gentrification of Harlem. So he, you know, before I had to go to the airport, rushed me up to the building, and we staged a picture with me standing in front of my old building with the book. And, like, a whole bunch of neighbors and kids, they knew I was like, oh, there she is, the author. Most of them had not read the book, however. I gave the superintendent a copy because I just happened to have an extra one because she was so nice. But in a way, they're excited about it. I hope some of the people on the street have read it. They're not usually the ones that come to my book talks in New York. I haven't seen too many of my old neighbors. Some of my childhood friends have come. They're just new to New York, or people my age, baby boomer age, who remember the old days. But, you know, you can pass, I don't know, John Grisham on the street, and people say, oh, look, there's John Grisham, and then just keep going. It's so impersonal and big and bustling and different from how my life has been since I've been here.
At this point, do you consider yourself more of a St. Louisan or more of a New Yorker?
like to think of myself a little bit as both. But really, I mean, I've been here more than half of my life now. So I guess I'm really a St. Louisan. It's nice to be able to go home and be with people and still kind of know my way around. But St. Louis is my home now. And I think I've paid homage to my old home by writing my book. It's still very much a part of me. It always will be. At one point I say in the book, the old folks used to say that tendencies get in your blood. And I believe that because I think Sugar Hill and Harlem is part of the fluid that fuels me to this day. So, yeah, I'm Harlem, but I'm New York. I'm St. Louis now.
What do you want St. Louisans to grasp from your book?
I would like them to learn about all the wonderful places, to understand the architecture, to understand how much colonial history is there. When I was 12, we moved across the street from Alexander Hamilton's home, the Grange. When I lived on Edgecombe Avenue, we were it was a long block or two from George Washington's headquarters. The park in front of us was Colonial Park. We lived on the hill, and then the Harlem Valley was below us, and there was a park, the kind of buffer zone, and that's arguably the place where the Battle of Harlem Heights was won, one of the very important battles during the Revolutionary War. Of course, there's the art and the literature, the museums, the Studio Museum of Harlem, the wonderful restaurants and boutiques that are all there now. I would like people to understand that and to see that. Those are some of the things that I write about that are important because they're history. I hope they'll do that.
In penning these memoirs, what was the biggest thing that you realized about yourself?
Well, one of the things I realized is how close I was to my stepfather. My mother and my stepfather divorced, so there's a lot of bitterness on her part. But when I started writing about him, that was a real revelation to me. And just how historic our community is. It's really the oldest community in America, except for maybe where the Pilgrims landed. But my story was had history. I mean, it's important. It's about a dying Harlem. Some of the young people actually who come to my talks say they come because they want to know what Harlem used to be like. They're new there. Some of them were actually children who left in their 20s and now are coming back with their families in their 30s and 40s. They grew up there and they're coming back from the suburbs. So it's a story worth telling.
That's St. Louis and Terry Baker Mulligan, talking with St. Louis Public Radio's Erin Williams about her memoir of growing up in Harlem. The book is called Sugar Hill, When the Sun Rose Over Harlem. To see a photo of the home that Mulligan grew up in, visit the Cityscape page at stlpublicradio.org. And coming up next, A Child's Christmas in Wales. This is St. Louis Public Radio.